Yeah, with this little.
Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts, Clinton Johnson and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, an art breaker, or an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, a show about local art. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I am here with the woman who says, make art. What are you doing? No, that's not the, I set up.
You know what? I had this set up. I was here at 9 o'clock this morning. Don't mess with me.
But I set up the one.
Don't mess with me. You know what? I've already talked to the band and we decided, the four of us, which one we were going to play. So you need to back up. Okay. Thank you. No.
All right, well,
continue your little intro thingy, all right?
My little intro thingy.
Yes.
Okay, well, we should do a parental advisory, because we always try to start with a parental advisory. The parental advisory is, at one point in this show, we'll hope not to, but one point in the show, we may say the word overdub. Yeah, you can feel the power of that word, can't you? Overdub. So if you have teeny tiny ones, if you have like little precious ones, little angels, your little angels, and you don't want to have to explain to them at the high top of a Sunday morning what the word overdub means, you might want to send them out the door. You might want to send them away. There's a trash heap outside they can play on, I'm sure. I'm sure. How you doing this morning, Leslie?
I was well until you got here, Clinton.
Wow. Wow. Should I leave? Because your wellness is my priority.
It is. Well, don't come in here messing with my stuff. I have my stuff all set up. You come in here, you pushing buttons and messing with my stuff. That's what I'm saying.
Push the button. You know that I try not to push your buttons.
Yet you seem so good at it. You do it so well.
You have very big buttons there. It's kind of hard to miss them at times.
Every once in a while.
And I'm a big fat guy. I turn around, suddenly I've hit your buttons. there was a button there. I didn't see it. It's just like, it happens.
It happens?
It happens.
Yeah. Okay.
Buttons. Can we put that on a t-shirt? Buttons happen. In fact, I think that would be actually rather nice on a t-shirt. There's a little bit of something, a little bit of irony.
Yes, I like that.
I want two t-shirts. One that says buttons happen, one that says ironing doesn't happen, because those would be my t-shirts.
That would be yours. Seriously, I think we should do that and just put the Homegrown logo on the back.
On the back?
Yeah.
There you go.
That should be our t-shirt.
Coming up with merch right here in front of you. You were here for the moment. Let's go on to some better moments. We're here with our first guests, Charlie Pastorfield, Susan Munson, and Stuart Holm from Mama Tried. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
It is a joy to have you guys here. How you doing?
Doing great. Very happy to be here.
Doing really well. Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Oh, there you go. Oh, Mother's Day, Mama Tried.
Oh, yeah.
We planned that. Of course we did. That was part of the plan all along. So if you had to describe Mom, actually, I'm not going to be coy. Let's just dive right into it. You guys got a CD coming out, self-titled CD, Mama Tried, a two CD set. Excitement that knows no bounds. I haven't listened to it. I'm loving it. How did you guys like doing it? How do you feel about it?
Well, we went into a studio out in Ivy just thinking we'd take a shot at recording the band because we were excited. Ooh. What we were doing live.
Hey, Charlie, why don't you move up to this mic? Because that mic, for some reason, isn't...
Aha, this mic is working.
There you go. That mic is working. All right.
So we went into a studio in Ivy because we'd been excited by what was happening live, and we wanted to see what it would be like recorded. And we went in, and usually recording is a painful, painful process that takes days and days and days, but we just started laying down tracks, and it was first take here, second take there, first take here. We ended up doing, 14, 16 songs in 2 days. The vocals went down in about 30 seconds. The only casualty to the process was unfortunately, Susan's acoustic guitar, which had too much bleed through because we were so freaking loud in the in the room that we so the solemn vow was no overdubs.
Oh, gracious.
But it was a great process. It was the most incredibly natural, organic playing experience I've ever had in the studio.
Yeah. I was reading the notes. It sounded like, did you go in meaning for it to be as organic and as loose as that?
Yeah, definitely. That was the whole idea, was to try to capture the live energy we had. Because I don't know how many times we'd played live, maybe three or four times. And we didn't really do a bunch of rehearsals before we played live the first time. So we had this very spontaneous thing happening. We wanted to get that on the disc.
Right. And so that's a thing. I mean, that's a challenge, right? I think there might not be a lot of people who aren't familiar with performing music and recording music. One, how hard it is to catch a sound when you record, especially with a band, but also how different recorded like a recorded song is when a band does it, as opposed to a live performed song, and that can be really, talk a little bit about that. Can you, or you mean, yeah.
No,
okay.
Well, I think there's a lot of bands that get their live act down, and they're playing really tight, and they go, "Let's go in the studio and record some of the stuff," and they get in there, and it's much like making a movie. It's repeating things over and over and over. And it just sucks the life out of your energy, you know, over the course of several hours. And it's very difficult to maintain your focus. And a lot of bands that are incredibly good live bands just are terrible in the studio, and vice versa. A lot of bands, you hear their CD and you go, wow, that's fantastic. And you go to see them and they're just not anything live. So, it's a very tedious and exacting process. We've just seemed to bypass the whole thing because we just set up live and we recorded all together in one room at one time, which I've never done before.
Well, and we recorded at 9 o'clock at night. And the second night, I had already had a gig and I didn't get to till what, 11:30? So we went late.
And my voice is a shadow of its former self. So we were getting ready to do the vocal parts. And I was a little nervous about how my voice was going to behave. Susan walks in with a bottle of tequila. Puts it down in front of me and she says, "Drink two shots now." And it worked like a charm. It really did.
It did. Yeah.
Did you guys have the Rolling Stones recording playbook? Is that what you did? Right. Midnight recording sessions with tequila? That sounds like
right. So we left out the heroin and blow. But otherwise, yes. That's,
I guess, kids, it's time to go outside.
Yeah. Exactly. Heroin, that's not, that wasn't one of our words. They could hear So you guys you guys have been described to me as a Grateful Dead cover band, which I think is a misleading title. It really is a misleading title because especially when I started listening to the work, because of the nature of what The Dead is. I mean, it's kind of like, and I've been thinking about it, it's kind of like saying, I'm like a Frank Sinatra cover singer. I mean, the thing is, Sinatra did so much stuff. To say, you know, I focus on the work of Frank Sinatra pretty much means that I get to wander through the Great American Jazz Songbook. And to say, oh, like, we're a Grateful Dead cover band, it's not like you guys are trying to replicate The Dead, certainly not. But it does mean that you guys get to be deeply, deeply rooted in some deep roots music, because, you know, that's, you know, part of what The Dead really, really liked. How do you guys see your relationship to the material that you guys are working on?
Well, I think it's a lot like jazz musicians when they get together. You know, people who don't play jazz are just always amazed at how four or five guys who don't know each other even get on the stage together and produce incredibly coherent music. And it's because they all know the songs as a basic framework. And I think when we get out playing live, I mean, the first time we played together, I think the fourth song in the set was going to be a four-minute song, and it ended up being about 25 minutes long. And when it was done, we all went, what the hell just happened? You know, and it happened two or three more times that night. It happens every time we play, and it's because I think when we step up to the microphone, it's, you know, it's like a feeling that anything can happen right now.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one great thing about this band. And sometimes what happens ain't so great. Sometimes it is. And that's sort of what the Grateful Dead was all about, too.
Totally. The Grateful Dead was never afraid to completely face plant on stage. And they have the recordings out there to prove it. But I think there's a lot of Grateful Dead cover bands do try to recreate the sonic texture of the Dead, and then their playing also is heavily influenced by the members of the Grateful Dead. And that's something where I think Mama Tried is a little different, is we've all been influenced by a lot of different music and been playing music for a long time, so we have our own sonic texture that we use, you know, as our identity and expression. And then we also don't necessarily play in a way that's overtly influenced by the individual members of the Dead. But the gestalt of the Dead, of improvising over the different, you know, of letting a song grow live, that's what we want to capture, and that's what we try to do.
Okay, so there are a lot of artists that I grew up listening to, that I'm sure you guys grew up listening to, when you said that, you know, the Dead weren't afraid to face plant on stage. I remember seeing this video of Nina Simone, and she's sitting at the piano. She's got a stadium full of people, and she forgot the words to the song. And she literally turned to the audience and said, does anybody know the next lyric? She's like, you know, like that. But that kind of honesty with an audience, do you think that is still alive in the music industry today, or do you think that people have become so used to cookie cutter planned shows that if that happened with a mainstream artist today, would it backfire on them?
I honestly think that that through all of time, the type of audience that accepts that is actually small. So I think there's still the people out there who want to hear adventurous music, who are attracted to dissonance, that the cookie cutter thing just doesn't interest them. But they're, you know, not the majority of the listeners out there. And I think even in Nina Simone's time, they weren't the majority of the listeners out there.
Yeah.
So it's always about artists trying to find their audience and getting the people who like that level of improvisation in there. You think of somebody like Ornette Coleman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he really has to find that relatively small percentage of people who can manage the uncertainty and the chaos that he wants in his music. So
do you guys, how many times have you guys face planted on stage?
Oh, I face plant every single time we play.
Every gig.
No, I don't sing. I tend to sing things differently every time. I don't sing it the same way. I hear something in my head and I'll sing a different note and I'll play things differently.
Yeah.
We don't play anything alike. Any time, it's always different. Every single time we play a song, it's different.
Well, because, I mean, to the audience, it may be brand new, but mm-hmm. to you guys, you've done it 10 million times. I mean, it's got to be interesting for you as you play it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to do it differently. In fact, as Charlie was saying, we didn't rehearse until after our like third gig. We were like, oh, well, maybe we should rehearse and learn something else, because we just already knew most of the songs, and we just did it.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest comments I ever received as a musician playing Grateful Dead music was the band that the three of us play with, called Alligator, which is a larger version of this band. We were playing at Friday After Five, and there was an older guy off to the side of the stage who just laughed through our entire set. An older hippie dude, you know. And so when we were done, I went over and said, hey, man. He goes, hey, how's it going? And I said, just wondering, you know, I noticed you laughing through our entire set. He goes, oh, well, I was a roadie for the Grateful Dead for 15 years.
Oh, whoa.
I hate Grateful Dead cover bands, but you guys have obviously spent so little time rehearsing this that it was awesome. And that's...
We just wing it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series. You're listening to 94.7 FM, Homegrown. Hi, this is Jason Burke of the Six Pack Songwriter Series.
15 minutes past the hour. We are here on Homegrown, your show about local art. Stay tuned. Afterwards, of course, the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. He's talking to Lee Channing today, psychic and intuitive analyst. Oh, you know, you don't want to miss that because she already knows whether or not you've missed it. If you're just tuning in, we're here with Charlie Pasterfield, Susan Munson, and Stuart Holm, three of the four members of Mama Tried, and we're talking about their group and also their CD that's coming out. So we should listen to a little bit of something, shouldn't we? Yeah, okay.
We should, and we should let you guys know our CD release is next Friday at the Ante Room, Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's gonna happen. We're going to tell them about that. Duck Blues off of Mama Tried's eponymous CD. There you go. Throwing
words today.
Hey, man.
It's Mother's Day.
We have to impress our mothers. And certainly it's better than the days where I spent my day suppressing my mother. So Charlie, what's it like doing guitar in the shadow of Garcia? I mean, did you think, because but I get the impression that you didn't even think about that that's not even a thing, because, like, you're an experienced guitarist. You're very experienced guitarist. You've been doing this a while. It's really great to hear your work on these songs, because it's really very different than what you're used to with a lot of these Dead songs.
Jerry Garcia is definitely a person who's had a lot of influence over the way that I play. But, you know, there's a lot of other people who've influenced me. And I just think when we go out to play, we don't really think about trying to imitate in any way. It's right. it's just kind of you play what you play, and it tends to work out 98% of the time, or maybe 90% of the time.
All right, let me ask you this, because there are a bunch of people, I think they are commonly known as haters, who dislike jam bands. And I've talked to them, and it's always interesting. You can hear the hater mindset, because they're completely shut off to a whole group or genre or type of something. And you say, oh, blah, 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 something, something, something. Oh, is that jam music? Yeah, I hate jam bands.
You mean like you with country music?
No, that's
every time we are in the car together and I pull out my country, you make a face. Don't even act like you don't.
And yet the other day I was enjoying the country stylings of Jim Wave down at the Blue Moon Diner, so...
But you have a problem with Patti Loveless in my car.
Maybe I have a problem with you in your car.
Oh.
You know what?
Yeah.
Don't pull the tiger's tail today. All right?
You just came.
Don't pull the tiger's tail today.
You came at me.
Yeah, I'm going to come at you in the parking lot later, too.
I like Patti Loveless. Thank you.
I'm thrown off. What was I talking about?
You're talking about
the train band. Wreck. There you go.
Jam
talking about your train wreck. Well, so what makes a good jam?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that people that don't like jam bands probably have never had the experience of being at a live show with a really good band that's just taking off into unknown places. And I have friends who don't like the Grateful Dead, and they say, it's just so lame and so like quiet and aimless. And they're certainly capable of that. But, you know, the first time I saw those guys, it just blew my mind. It was, you know, a long, long time ago. It was when Pigpen was alive. And it was a ferocious, the most ferocious live act I've ever seen, with the possible exception of James Brown. But they were...
That's a heavy statement.
Yeah.
That's a heavy statement.
They went into... I mean, it was just... It was a whole different sound, and once you heard that sound, it was just permanently burned into your brain. And so I think once you hear a band like that and appreciate it, it opens your mind to hearing other bands in that genre. But if you've never had that experience, it can sound kind of wandering and formless.
So it's interesting you compare him to James Brown live. I mean, because I've seen James Brown live 5 times. First time he was at Wolf Trap, I was 14. I was in the orchestra, and yes, James Brown came down and danced with me. Awesome. Yeah, it was awesome.
Wait a minute.
What?
14.
Yeah.
Wolf Trap.
Yeah.
James Brown.
Yeah.
James Brown.
Yeah.
James Brown.
Huh.
Came down and danced with you.
Yes.
How are you still here? How are you still alive? How did you not just like explode in just a puff of soul and funk right there?
I know. So, you know, I've seen him live 5 times. Absolutely love his music. I mean, I grew up with him. So when you compare the Dead to James, is it the musicality? Is it the intricacy of what they do? Because, I mean, James, when he performed, like, his band was so tight. Like, he could move a pinky finger, yeah, and they would change direction. Like, is that what you're talking about?
Well, in a way, yes, it is. That James got his power through just incredible tightness, like a machine that was so perfectly oiled up and,
yeah,
ready to go.
Incredible control.
Yeah. But the Grateful Dead... It's kind of the opposite, but it's a sonic tightness, like where the instruments fit together perfectly, and when it comes through a big PA system, it's an incredible sound.
Okay.
And it was their mindset. It's like a flock of birds all moving together. The Dead, they would meander along, and they would all know where they were going, and someone would hit a lick. Jerry would start something, and then Phil would hear it, and then they would all be off on that tangent. They knew where they were going because they were just like that.
It's also about sort of the ferociousness of the groove, sort of a rhythmic intensity. And the Dead could definitely hit with the two drummers and Phil Lesh fueling things from the bottom. Some really intense rhythmic spaces. And they played some very complicated rhythmic songs, like Estimated Profit is in 14. And they would jam that stuff all night.
Right.
And, so I think in that sense, that James Brown, all great music, there's something about, you know, you can count time, but then when a great band plays in time a certain way, there's just an added dimension of the groove of that thing. It's so much more powerful than just a metronome clicking in perfect time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I saw Branford Marsalis in concert last summer with one of his smaller jazz bands, and they had that same thing. I mean, the way they gave room to a soloist to travel and kind of find something, and I'm sitting in the audience, you know. I mean, I played clarinet. I sang in chorus, like I'm sitting there and I'm following it. And I'm like, how are you going to get back? How are you going to get back? It got really interesting to me how they just all knew, oh, okay, it's coming up. Here he comes. Okay, he's back to the regular melody. Like it's amazing to watch that. And I feel bad that a lot of people who listen to music nowadays don't even know enough to even listen for that. Like they don't know how great that is.
It is kind of disturbing. There are plenty of kids that do listen to that, but in general, like, music is not a big deal in high school, I don't think, you know. It's really... Yeah. I'm sorry, I really don't want to digress, but I have a great James Brown Mother's Day story, if you want to hear
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. You must end us on the James Brown Mother's Day story.
I had the honor of playing with him, opening for him in New York one time, and I consider James Brown, like, the preeminent musician of the 20th century. I mean, I think... When 500 years from now, he'll be regarded as the man of the 20th century. But we played with him. I had my old James Brown albums, and after the show, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, I went downstairs to see if he would autograph them. And we get in this long hallway, and there's a guy standing there, and it's his son. And so we said, oh, I was wondering if we could get James to autograph our records. And he goes, well, Daddy will be out in a little bit. He's getting his hair done. So we wait about... maybe 15, 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, at the end of the hallway, the door opens. Here comes James, very elegant older woman on one arm, a very beautiful younger woman on the other. I said, oh, is that your sister? And he goes, no, that's my mama and daddy's new girlfriend. I thought, man, that's a guy I'd like to meet, and I did. I got to talk to him for like 15 minutes. It was great.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shout out to Kent Rain, who couldn't be here today, your drummer. Charlie, Susan, Stewart, thank you so much for coming. Mama Tried in the studio. Tell them the who, what, when, where, and why about the upcoming CD release concert.
This Friday, May 13th, we'll be at the Anteroom. The show, our doors open at 7. The show starts at 8. An old friend of mine, David Frank, has a duo that's going to be opening the show for the first like 45-minute set. Then we'll play from 9 until dawn. Yeah. And we're going to be doing all the stuff off the CDs and then a bunch of new stuff we've been working on, including some original stuff that we've...
All right.
That's 219 Water Street. And it's actually in the building that the ice rink is part of.
Yeah, yeah.
But you enter from Water Street, and it's right next to Escafé.
A really nice club, too.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks, Clinton. Thanks.
About some other things that you can see in this gray. That one's mine. That's the other one. It's over there. Other things that you can see at this great artistic town of ours. This is the last day to see Romeo and Juliet, the teen show, at Guerrilla Theater on Allied Street. Currently running, Annie Temmink doing Hat Shapes at the VTF and Radio IQ Studio Gallery of the New City Arts Initiative. That's Hats and Drawings by Annie Temmink. Gallery hours by appointment. Also currently running in terms of the New City Arts, Flower Till Death Do We Part.
Prints and paintings by local artist Hannah Barefoot at the Welcome Gallery of New City Arts Initiative. Currently running until May 29th, Raptors, paintings by Cynthia Burke at the McGuffey Art Center. And also running currently till May 15th, over in Stanton in the theatrical world, Ghost, the musical, based on the popular film, at Shannon Arts in Stanton. Tickets at www.shannonarts.org. Also currently running, talking about theater coming back over the mountain, until May 22nd, the Great American Trailer Park Musical at Four County Players. We just had Four County on here last week talking about it. And going until May 25th, open submissions are still going on for writers and directors for this year's summer shorts at Guerrilla Theater. So contact Guerrilla Theater if you think you've got a summer short or you'd like to direct one. May 13th, local fiction and nonfiction writer, local comic book artist, and Baltimore journalist read from their work. It's Emma Eisenberg, Sophia Weiderman, and Ryan Wilson at The Bridge, PAI. May 14th to 15th, Creatures at City Clay. You can go to City Clay and you make your own creatures. They can be real or imaginary. Check out for information at cityclayseville.com. May 14th, auditions for Shannon Arts' summer production of West Side Story in Stanton from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. More info at www.shannonarts.org. And May 14th, Wings, a play loosely based on Aristophanes the Birds, playing again at the Ix Art Park. If you missed it last time, see it now. May 16th, summer, all throughout the summer, it's Art and Country at the Kluge Rue Aboriginal Art Collection, a diverse selection of works on canvas, paper, and even on eucalyptus bark, drawn from the Kluge Rue Collection, looking at how the original Aboriginal artists figure their relationship with their homelands, and to look at just some of the musical options that we have available to us. Today, Peyton Tochterman, 2 p.m. at Glasshouse Winery. Tomorrow, Daniel Eyes and the Vibes and Moby and the Dicks at the Anteroom. May 10th, Hear the Burn, Seville Rocks for Bernie at the Anteroom. Now to get your musical and political Jones covered in one fell swoop. Also May 10th, Uncovered with Brady Earnhardt at S Cafe, my favorite monthly singer-songwriter open mic. May 11th, Ryan Garst and Emily Kresge at Heritage on Main over in Waynesboro. Also the open mic night at Pro Reynato Farm Brewery, same night. On May 12th, it's Reggae Residency with Positive Collective at the Anteroom and Blues Night at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. May 13th, Fridays After 5, it's We Are Star Children. Also going from May 13th to May 15th, La Traviata by Ashlawn Highlands Opera, If the Rock and Roll Is Not Your Stroll. Check out the Ashlawn Highlands Opera and the Oratorio Society of Virginia at the Paramount Theater presenting La Traviata. May 13th also, Bobinette at Fellini's, Crow Jane at the Whiskey Bar, Love Cannon at the Jefferson Theater, your bluegrass versions of popular 80s tunes, and Glass Betty at Heritage on Main over in Waynesboro. May 14th, the Weed Eaters play at Almar Cider Works at 2 p.m. The Crozet Community Orchestra has a recital at 4 p.m. at the Crozet Baptist Church. The Sally Rose Band that night with Borrowed Beams at the Southern Cafe Music Hall. And here's the big gig. May 14th, I Would Dance For You, a Prince celebration at the Jefferson Theater. Purple is preferred. Of course, every Monday it's the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Wednesday it's Bob Bonetta at Cafe Cultura. Also the Mike Wazensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's and Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday it's the Woolen Writers Revival hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And every Thursday down at Miller's, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while you just got to come down to Dearth. And that's just some of the wonderful artistic events in our wonderful artistic town. Thirty-four minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art. Stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday morning wake-up call. Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore, who is talking to Lee Channing, psychic and intuitive analyst. But before we get that, we've got our next guests. Coming from the Chicken Bank Collectives, Zach McConnell and Cynthia Perez Navarro.
Howdy.
Welcome, guys.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, cool.
How you doing?
Excellent.
Good. You guys, I'm so pleased that you arrived today. You guys just traveled from North Carolina?
Winston-Salem. We were part of a dance festival and started driving here, what was it, midnight last night?
the long drive from Winston-Salem. How was the drive?
It was good, foggy, introspective.
So please tell our listeners about the Chicken Bank Collective if they do not know. And how could they not know? I mean,
I know. How could they not know? So the Chicken Bank Collective is six women, and we are an interdisciplinary arts collective. And half of us are from Mexico, and half are from the United States. And we just kind of have a theory that we want to continue working with each other no matter what. So maybe I have time and Cynthia has computer skills, or I might, you know, have the costumes and then Julie finds the space, like that we're always putting whatever we have into our bank and not keeping track. You know, we know ultimately it's all going to come out in the wash, like our mama said, and we'll keep working no matter what and keep giving. And so we have a series of residencies in this year. We did a spring to spring year. So this is our fourth and final residency of our year here, our home, one of our homes.
How many different homes do you have?
Well, we are six women, and we are all over the place. So I will say that we have six different places that we work and we try to visit and put our work through art and collaborate and keep connecting and building those network through all those communities. So it's here in Virginia, it's in Boulder, it's Washington, it's in Puebla, in Cholula, it's Chiapas, it's Mexico City, all the places where we come from.
So how did this collective get together? Because that's a wide range. I mean, those are people from all over the place. I mean, I don't run into many people from Boulder and from Chiapas. You know, it's just...
Well, I mean, it's perfect that we're on your show, because it actually started in Charlottesville and then kind of progressed to Cholula, Mexico. I met Ray Elliott Schwartz at School of the Arts, but then we were part of the Zen Monkey Project here with Catherine Birdsall and Savi Durkee and Brad Stoller. And Julie Rothschild was part of that in one of our, you know, different renditions of Zen Monkey Project. And we always wanted to work together. But then flash forward, and Ray moves to Mexico, and he becomes the coordinator of dance at UDLAP, a university in Cholula, Puebla, and he starts with Mayra Morales. How do you say it? Morales?
Mayra Morales.
Yes. She's amazing. They started this incredible free dance festival called Performatica, and it's an international dance festival. And basically, if you can get there and take care of yourself, everything's free. So you can take class for free, or see performances for free.
Wow.
Also, you're teaching for free, and you're performing for free. And it kind of takes the hierarchy out of it. You know, someone that you're next to could be your teacher in the next class, or the performer. Or maybe they've never danced before.
Yeah, that sounds like part of the collective paradigm.
Right. Yes. There. And so that drew me there. And then I started working with Cynthia, who was a student there. And then I also started working with Denise, who's another member of the collective. And then years later, after we kind of worked on our own, we did some stuff here, the unearthing and other pieces. Invisible Spines at Dogtown Dance Theater in Richmond.
Julie, and the unearthing was at the X building.
Thank you, X. And Julie wanted to do a show. She took Animal from Atlanta, and she wanted to take it to Performatica, but none of the dancers or performers who were in the Atlanta show could do it. So
just Amanda.
Yeah, just Amanda. You're right. And so she's panicking a little bit, and I'm like, oh, I know.
I know who could do it. So we reached out to Cynthia and Denise and Paola de la Concha. And then we just had such an amazing time working together. We knew it was something really special. Everyone within the group at that time had space in their life where they could do residencies, because a lot of people we want to work with, maybe they have kids or kids at a certain age where they can't go away for 2 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. So it really just came out of that situation, and we met Gabby through Denise, and so everybody's kind of connected, even to Charlottesville. Hello, Charlottesville.
Wow. So talk about the residency. How does the residency work? Because it's a different model than I'm used to. I'm used to people having a home, or artists being in one place, having a home base, and doing exhibits or performances. Talk about the residency, what you guys do.
Well, we are sure that our collective work will strengthen the relationship between our communities. So through this connection and through the daily life art and through all the proposals that we are bringing, we feel that the frame of a artistic residency will embrace, like, having dance, live performances, having also the multimedia frame, having the connection with the community, like working with the people that they are also holding space. So I think the artistic residency frame will embrace that kind of work that we are doing.
Yeah. Wow.
Is that Batman?
I think so. I think we'll have to go out and fight crime in Gotham City now.
Okay, let's do it in residency form.
Great. So, and that threw me off again.
Well, the reality is we're trying to keep connecting to local organizations that kind of stick around. I mean, we're breezing through, but we breeze through often. So we want to continue networking with all of these different organizations in Cholula, here, Charlottesville is a great home base, but so is Boulder. So then we reach out to people that we've worked with before, like the Bridge, you know, mm-hmm. McGuffey Art Center, mm-hmm. All of our favorite restaurants who supported us as artists through the years. Lighthouse is sponsoring some of the things that we're doing. We're going to go to Southwood Boys and Girls Club. We've worked with them before and kind of give back. So we aren't living here, even though I feel like it's my second home. Uh-huh. I lived here for many, 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 many years. but we'll continue to come back and kind of plug in and help how we can and encourage how we can and keep those ties going and building and maybe cross connect. You know, maybe Lighthouse starts working with Bebedero because they've been sweet enough to offer us $2 off drinks if people buy our tickets in advance. And they're right there in the glass building with Lighthouse's loft studio. So, like, how can our connections to different people and organizations help those organizations? And then we want to bring people from Mexico here. So we work with Ajite y Sierva. How'd I do? Was that bad? No. Please say it. My pronunciation sucks.
So the Festival Itinerante Ajite y Sierva, which it's led by Jimena Monroy, a Mexican videographer, artist, dancer. It is the only international festival happening in Mexico. It's been the seventh.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and... Yeah, and she's one of the artists in residency with our last project that she was part of the camera work mm-hmm. and editing, and she's been doing all the filming editing too, as well as Gabby, and for our film.
Secondary Succession, feature leaked film coming soon. Is that allowed? Shameless
yeah.
plugging?
Oh, shameless plugging. This show is all about shameless plugging. We are here for your shameless plugging.
So then if it goes well, we're teaching a lab for 12 to 16 year olds for dance for film, because it's a new kind of
world out there. It's getting really exciting. It's been around for about 20 or 30 years, but it's starting to get traction. And so she, yes, she's our guest artist, Hamina, but she also runs this dance festival, International Dance for Film Festival. Why not see if we can bring it here? You know, why not connect her to Dogtown Dance Theater where they screen dance for film?
Over in Richmond.
So then suddenly, like, my deep connection to Charlottesville, I get to pull these other threads, you know, these roots. So maybe my connection out to Washington State or to San Francisco or her connection to Puebla, suddenly it's coming here and we see that the world's a little bit larger and a little bit more connected at the same time. And that's really exciting to us, especially in the culture of the world that we're experiencing right now and the relationship between the United States and Mexico. And we're just sisters.
Aren't you afraid that someone's going to build a wall around your whole group?
And then make us pay for it.
And then make you pay for it.
I wake up with cold sweats.
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC. Hey, this is Michael Clem.
Mr. Mike telling you who we are and where we are. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Zap McConnell and Cynthia Perez Navarro from the Chicken Bank Collective. Tell us about Chrysalis.
Okay. Which do you want to do? Should I? You? Me? Wait, hold on. Hold on.
The collective is collecting.
The collective, we're actually having a collective moment. Who talks first?
So Chrysalis is our fourth residency that we organized for the year. And we brought this idea of having this evolving and layered work, and we got into that name, Chrysalis. So you're going to see part of the process and the evolving experience of working together for this year as officially Chicken Bank Collective. And we are going to have on Thursday the 12th at Bebedero. There's a Fandango dinner starting at 6:30 p.m. And Friday the 13th, we are going to have our dance performance at McGaffey Art Center at 8 p.m. Saturday the 14th, we are going to be part of this amazing Festival of the Culture at Lee Park from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And same day, for free, there's a master class at the McGaffey Art Center.
Dance class people, come on.
Yeah, we are so excited to keep connecting with this community and see people that want to just enjoy themselves, awaken their body, and just feel free to share their moves with us. Saturday, also performing.
Yeah, it's a lot. We're going to drink a lot of coffee. Watch out, Mudhouse.
So, and the next day, Sunday, the 15th at Lighthouse Studio, we're going to have our lab from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Drinks at the Bebedero in the glass building at 7 p.m. Before the screening, of course, there's $2 off margaritas if you buy tickets in advance. You can check the tickets and all the information at www.chickenbankcollective.com.
You mean somebody didn't have www.chickenbankcollective.com?
I know. I actually had to wrestle them for that. luckily, I had watched a lot of Claw, so I had my moves. But the final event of the whole residency is at the Bridge Tuesday the 7th, and that's from 7 to 9 p.m. And it's just a free community conversation. We're going to share it with Lua, or Luminari Civil, and Estella and Dave are amazing. They're sponsoring us in our performance at our old dance studio, Studio 11 at the McGuffey. But they're also going to play music in the performance. And when you come to Bebedero on Thursday, that's why we're there, because they play every Thursday night, and just get like a kind of Veracruz meets Puebla feel. And so on Thursday the 17th, we just want to talk about what is it like to have an international interdisciplinary collective. I mean, we have different time zones. What is the conversation there about
different languages?
Different languages, right. Different cultures, different ways of approaching work. What
different
work?
Politics?
Different politics. I mean, we're also just different people, yeah. Are we? Yes.
Yes, we are.
We're very different people. And then share, you know, have questions and have that general conversation of like, how can different cultures mix and mingle and hold on to their self, but also slough off on others? Where is that, you know, expropriation? Where is it supporting? I mean, it's a slippery slope, and it's a conversation that I think needs to be always happening. And then we'll share that evening also with Lua again, and they'll play music and talk about their organization, and they live here. And so then we get to see what they're up to. But you can get all kinds of information, like Cynthia said, on our website. And then we're gonna hang out like at the Twister Branch Tea House for dinner before the bridge on Tuesday, and we're gonna go see Jim Wave, of course, at the Blue Moon Diner, and Gypsy Jazz Tuesday night. See Rick Olvera's trio, and we're definitely gonna go get some Dearth at Miller's, and just like support the organizations that have really supported my work in the past in Charlottesville, honestly, have been the restaurants that I've worked at and the restaurants my friends own. A lot of times it's really hard to get grants or get supported when you do project-to-project art, which is what we do. So we don't have a huge administrative bulk that's kind of helping us along the way. But somehow, you know, we've managed to continue doing work together or on our own for years. And I've been doing work, Julie's, you know, just for 20, 25 years. And so thank you, all of those local restaurants that help people like us.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you guys for coming on our show and talking about what's coming up. All these amazing things you've got coming up. Give the URL one more time for
it's
people to find out.
www.chickenbankcollective.com. How was my enunciation? Was that good?
I thought that was excellent.
Okay. And you can also find us on our page, Facebook page, as Chicken Bank Collective.
Excellent.
Come out. Experience dance.
Zap, Cynthia, gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, Clinton.
All right. 52 minutes past the hour, and now it's time for the only part of the show that people really care about, Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Thank you so much, Clinton. So, this is a very special day. It's a day set aside to honor the person without whom we would not exist. It's Mother's Day. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to look at how we can say thank you. Thank you seems so vapid in the cold light of day, especially considering what she did for us. Forget what they do before we get here. Let's talk about what they go through just getting us here. I mean, normally at this point, I would ask the male part of the audience to leave the room because it's about to be all girl talk in here. But this time, I want you to do the opposite. Right now, Clinton is probably giving me a horrid look and stuffing his fingers in his ears. And yet, I continue with a huge smile on my face. In my case, my mother tells me that she threw up for 9 months with my brother and was nauseous for 9 months with me. She remembers being beyond tired before she had me. Then finally, on the big day, she had a burst of energy. She cleaned the entire house, she made a huge dinner, and as soon as she sat down to eat, she went into labor. Several hours later, the joy of her life arrived. Me. Later, I was as big as a house myself, and what should come as a surprise to no one who really knows me, I slept through the first few hours of labor with my daughter. I woke, scaring my grandmother half to death.
after a frantic drive from Goochland to Charlottesville and arriving at UVA Hospital, I was asked rather unceremoniously by a nurse who was handing me a phone to tell them why I was there. My answer to her was not something I can say on the radio. Let's just say I was less than congenial. And then she wheeled me into the room where the joy of my life arrived. And only after one push and less than 7 hours labor. Then there comes the breastfeeding, the diaper changing, the skinned knees, the first rock or handful of sand eaten. There's bath time and story time. There's the first day of school, the first day of high school, and then the first day of college. And if we're lucky, the last day of college. There's helping them find that first apartment, that first job. There's helping them pick, hopefully, the only wedding dress they'll ever have and plan what people will eat and dance to at the reception. And before a nail it, you get that call that your baby is going to have a baby. It's a vicious circle, people. A circle that we all go through. Maybe not in the same order, but we all go through it. And it's good to have a day where we can say thank you to the woman who helped us get there. Once again, in my case, I can't say thank you enough to the wonderful woman I get to call my mother. She's made me laugh when I was crying. She's pushed me when I needed it and confronted me when I thought I couldn't go on. My mother had two children, went to college while we were little. She's served on Virginia Commonwealth Community College Association as president, the vice chair of the Newport News Democratic Committee, the Virginia Library Association, the National Council of Negro Women, Black Women United for Action, and the Rotary Club. She's playing piano. She learned to quilt. And she still takes time to help me make the occasional dress or evening gown. She's my best friend. We talk every day. She's the first person I want to call when something happens, and she's the only person who has and will continue to love me unconditionally. And that's the same kind of mother I want to be for my daughter. Maybe a bit stranger, but the same. Strangely enough, my daughter and I are freakishly linked, so we're well on our way. So today, I want everybody to give a big hug or a big kiss or take a moment and remember your mother. You only get one, as Harvey Fierstein tells us.
Loving you is like food to my soul.
Loving you is like food to my soul.
Contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.